All right. So, welcome back. Thank you for being here today, continuing the reading through of the book Nityananda in Divine Presence. This is episode 10, and we're in the second half of the book, approaching the end. We're at the chapter Nityananda's Passing, August 8, 1961. And we see the wrap-up phase of his incarnation as Nityananda. He has many names, by the way. That's just one name that he's been given and used. He's known by other names in other places. And so I'll read it and see if I can restrain myself from commentary to commentary at the end. But let's see where that goes. I'll explain little things along the way as well. So, from Divine Presence, Nityananda's Passing, August 8, 1961, begins. On the afternoon of July 25, 1961, so just about 2 weeks before, a weakened Nityananda asked Gopal Mama, his attendant, to arrange for a chair to carry him to the nearby Bangalore Wala building. Wala is like the master of, like Chai Wala is the master of tea. So the tea director, Bangalore Wala, means sort of the director or master of Bangalore, a town, city in the south. He said that he would remain there for a fortnight, 14 days, and exactly 2 weeks later, the yogi, Nityananda, took Maha Samadhi. That means great samadhi, or the great, considered in Hinduism again, the same as parinirvana, Gautama's death, meaning going into final complete enlightenment in the subtle. This is the way Hinduism says about the same thing. And again, not everybody who's called going is considered going into Maha Samadhi, meaning dying, really is finished with the octave. Anyway, his bed, Nityananda's bed, still stands in the building's main hall and is revered as a shrine. Confusion was evident in the months preceding his passing. One rumor had Nityananda moving to the city of Bangalore, a plan primarily fostered by Lash Mansa Kode, who oversaw construction of the Bangalore Wala building. He went so far as to charter an airplane. Hearing of this, devotees rushed to Ganesh Puri to argue that it would make Nityananda less accessible to them. Nityananda said that he had no intention of leaving and that, quote, an assembly of sages, end quote, had already suggested that, quote, it be here only. And the note is that Nityananda was referring to masters from the subtle realms, such as Siddhaloka. In Buddhism, we'd say Brahmaloka, loka meaning world or realm. Siddhaloka is the realm or world of the Siddhas, who are accomplished beings, very similar in Buddhism, I'd say, to third stage and fourth stage, non-returners and arhant or higher self level and up. But unable or unwilling to understand the implications of this statement, meaning the statement that Nityananda had no intention of leaving, and an assembly of sages had already suggested it be here only, it meaning his departure. Unable, unwilling to understand that, Kode and others continued with their plans. The day before the scheduled flight, however, the master developed diarrhea and the trip was canceled. So you see his body really is falling apart. In hindsight, his move to the Bangalore Wala building appeared premeditated. It was the only building in Ganesh Puri large enough to encompass the multitude who would soon come to see him one last time. Remodeling the old ashram was likewise timely. In early June of 1961, Nityananda learned that it was still unfinished. The voluntary backers had postponed the roof until after the monsoon season of rains, but the yogi, Nityananda, insisted that there was no time to lose. He ordered them to lay the slab immediately and to use ashram funds if necessary. These instructions were followed, and it was in the rebuilt section of the old Vayakunt ashram that his earthly remains were later interred. So he was preparing the infrastructure for the guests, the visitors, the throngs that would come after his death. Of the many signs revealed to devotees in those last months, most were misinterpreted or ignored. For instance, Mrs. Muktabai recalled that shortly after his move to the Bangalore Wala building, Nityananda told her there would be a major pilgrimage to Ganesh Puri in 2 weeks' time. She wondered, but never thought to ask, why so many people would come during the monsoon. However, one person understood, a woman devotee from Dadar called Mataji by her followers and Mantra Siddhi by Nityananda. And so this is a female devotee who was also a leader of a small group. Mantra Siddhi by mantra means the mantra, spiritual syllables and phrases. Siddhi means she was a kind of accomplished yogi of that mantra activity. So she figured it out, what was happening, but seems nobody else did. In May 1961, the day before she, Mantra Siddhi Bai, arrived for a visit, he, Nityananda, experienced a discharge from his ear. He did not complain, and the secretion was odorless, but devotees nonetheless called in a respected specialist. Although he had never met his patient, the doctor prostrated himself and refused to prescribe any medication until Nityananda promised to recover. The master nodded his assurance, and the doctor gave Gopal Mama some capsules with instructions for administering them. He then departed. The yogi, so this means Nityananda every time he says the yogi. The yogi accepted a capsule, saying he did so because the good doctor had shown great sensitivity. But later he refused a second one. Quote, one is enough, he explained. His bhavana, which is spiritual cultivation, has worked. Mantra Siddhi Bai, learning of the discharge from his ear, began crying and begged Nityananda not to leave. She knew what was going on. She interpreted it as a sign that he was cleansing his system of toxins, and for only one purpose. The master admonished her, why cry? Stop it. Greater work is possible in the subtle plane than in the gross, meaning in higher dimensions or so-called time-space. To the others, including Mrs. Muktabai, he said he had injured his ear long ago in a fall in the Canary Caves. I'll talk about that later. The way Dr. Pandlaskar heard of the Mahasamadhi was decidedly odd. Early that morning, and we've talked about this story a few times, early that morning, the doctor's 9-year-old son had confronted his parents with the words, what are you doing here? Go to Ganesh Puri. He leaves today because the Assembly of Sages says that he alone can help in the forthcoming Ashtagraha Yoga. It's actually Ashtagraha, astrological condition. Astrological indications are for great evil to the world in general and to India in particular. The parents were so astonished at the boy's bizarre words that they reprimanded him for talking nonsense. But that evening they heard of Nityananda's passing and departed at once. The boy was so affected by his experience that he did not fully recover for years. His message was thought to refer to the conjunction of all planets in a single sign, the next occurrence being in February 1962, when all 8 entered Capricorn, the sign of India. It was a hot May afternoon in 1961 when M.U. Hattengi, meaning the compiler of this book, first heard what he called a telepathic bell, announcing that Nityananda would soon take Mahasamadhi. This is his story. Fearing the yogi had already discarded his human form, meaning already, I tried not to think about it. The next morning, I reluctantly opened the Delhi paper, New Delhi newspaper, even though it would hardly mention a non-political event in Bombay. All the same, I was relieved to find nothing in the obituaries. The prospect haunted me for the next 3 months. I grew insecure about my own spiritual practice, even though Nityananda had told me there was nothing to read or study. Even worse was the thought of being unable to contact him in a physical form. I had not yet heard of his assurance that greater work was possible on the subtle plane, and since 1948, my visits to see him were infrequent and largely in the public eye. No longer did I quietly sit with him in private. True, he once said that when a child learns to walk, the mother, still watchful, must allow it freedom to run around. Perhaps he should have added, even if the child tries to hang on to the mother. I knew His Grace was with me wherever I was stationed in the Navy, but I also knew that I could contact him if necessary, meaning physically while Nityananda was in body. Going on, unable to leave the naval station, I made a plan. Knowing that Mrs. Muktabai, his friend, still went to Ganeshpuri every 2 weeks, I wrote asking her to report on Nityananda's health after each visit and enclosed some self-addressed envelopes. Her letters began arriving regularly, the first few indicating that he was well. Her third or fourth letter, however, referred to some debility as well as talk of his undertaking a trip to Kanangad in the south. This confused but did not worry me. He had told me in 1944 that he would remain in the Ganeshpuri ashram, and even if he changed his mind, I was used to traveling great distances to see him. Besides, I was planning a visit in early August, and it was the mid-July at that time. But my anxiety continued, and it was an unhappy period for me. The last letter from Mrs. Muktabai was dated August 4, and reached me on August 7, the day before he left. It was a dark and rainy evening, and I grew despondent reading it. She wrote to me to come at once, because the master was very weak. Back in December, I had made of 1960. Back in December, I had made a small altar in my home. On a corner shelf, lit by the first rays of the morning sun, I kept a framed photograph of Nityananda, along with flowers from our garden and a silver lamp. The lamp held just enough oil to burn for an hour, and it was my custom to light it at every evening at sunset. The day after the distressing letter, I came home for lunch to find the little lamp already burning. In turn, the picture was decorated with flower garlands and flanked by two vases, each containing sweets traditionally prepared for the festival of Ganesha's birth. When I asked my wife why she had arranged such a display, she said she had simply felt like it. I had never shared with her my fears about Nityananda's passing, and so her demonstration was all the more remarkable. She lit the oil lamp at 9 that morning, and it had never gone out. She collected every flower in the garden, including the water lilies, something she had never done before, and then prepared the modaks, I'm not sure what that is, all this without knowing why. The mystery was solved the next morning when I learned of the Mahasamadhi, meaning he wasn't there physically for it. While I was so absorbed in the world, the master sent this sign of his blessing from 900 miles away. Nityananda occupied a room directly above the entrance of the Bangalorewala building. For the first 3 or 4 days, though weak, he walked a little. July 27 was his last Guru Purnima, a day on which Hindus traditionally honor the teacher, and he addressed the assembled devotees for nearly 45 minutes in a surprisingly strong voice. He said that the boxcars of a train going up a hill might slip backward without sand thrown on the tracks for traction. To maintain a lasting connection with the engine, each boxcar must forge a bond of unshakable faith and conviction. Everything else, he said, would happen automatically. He then mentioned plans for building a hospital in Ganeshpuri. A day or so later, With only Madhumama present, he stood on the balcony watching the sunset in a sky that was unusually clear for July. Nityananda said, "Anyone wanting to see the sun should do it now, for tomorrow he may not be seen." The following morning dawned cloudy and stayed that way as a noticeably weaker Nityananda was moved to the main hall. There he stayed until he died. On August 7, the day before, around 4 in the afternoon, he asked for B.H. Mehta, popularly called Babubhai Lokandwala. Mehta, who was in a restaurant having tea at the time, this is the afternoon the day before, learned of the summons and hurried to the main hall. There the yogi handed him a large parcel wrapped in a piece of cloth and asked him to look after Kanangad, his Guruvan in the south. The bundle contained cash, gold, and other valuables that Mehta eventually used, along with funds he collected, to build the two Kanangad temples above the rock-cut caves and at Guruvana, or Guruvan. And this note says Guruvana is the area of jungle where Nityananda was found as an infant. A temple dedicated to Nityananda stands there today, along with many other temples in India decorated or dedicated to the master, meaning there are other temples in other parts of the country. But that was his central ashram location. It was Kanangad in the south, and that is Guruvan. I was going to go there, and I couldn't stand India that much, so I couldn't make it physically, but I don't think that's so important. For months, devotees had noticed in Nityananda a growing sadness that often approached tears. We can only surmise that the great yogi felt as Krishna did in the Bhagavad Gita when he said he granted supplicants what they prayed for. But more often than not, the only thing they wanted was worldly success or material gain. This is, I think, Krishna speaking. "Too many fools," he said, Krishna said, "passed his dwelling without asking for the liberation he offered. Likewise, people brought Nityananda their earthly cares. These he relieved, hoping to inspire in them a hunger for the spiritual gifts he was empowered to bestow. But in the end, like Krishna, he was disappointed. Some people actually came to Ganesh Puri for a lucky number to gamble on. They might count, for instance, how many of his fingers were visible at a given moment, or the number of steps he took. Usually, this was when Nityananda threw stones or shouted." Some people really don't get it. And the note on this is, this is only my view from the heart. I think it's maybe Chaitanyananda. But it is understood what Nityananda meant by, quote, "more work can be done in the subtle," end quote. Nityananda, while incarnate, was with people. All the people who asked for the liberation he offered received it. As in the case of remarking to Rao that he was enjoying the incense, this is a story of a devotee, Mr. Rao, who was hundreds of miles away and did a certain kind of ritual, devotional prayer to Nityananda with incense, and Nityananda later said he enjoyed the incense. So as in this case of remarking to Rao that Nityananda was enjoying the incense, even though it was being waved in front of a hole over 100 miles away, he showed that he was wherever there was devotion. Though in the gross, physical, he suffused the lives of all who desired what he offered through his permanent establishment in the subtle. Having merged with the formless absolute, yet he projects subtle form from the realm of Sitaloka now, meaning upper dimension, and suffuses and permeates all who seek him within and without. Let me read this again. Though in the gross, meaning when he was in the physical or is at that time in the physical, he suffused the lives of all who desired what he offered through his permanent establishment in the subtle. And I would say, then, having merged with the formless absolute, yet then, or now, he projects subtle form from the realm of Siddhaloka now, and suffuses and permeates all who seek him within and without. In this way, only the earnest seeker with a pure heart can find him. Now, being in the subtle. And the numbers he can reach are limitless, not limited by the physical bodies nearby. By pure, it is not meant a person with perfect behavior, but rather perfect love for the Master, a perfect desire to merge with God Shiva, or the Absolute, and his gift of divine liberation and understanding. All who desire may fall under the protection of the Siddha lineage and the Bhagavan Nityananda, the essence of love. This is, again, Chaitanyananda's commentary, I believe. On the evening of August 7, the night before, the engineer Hegde felt drawn to Ganesh Puri. Traveling alone, he gained entry to the Samadhi Hall with some difficulty and found Monappa at Nityananda's bedside. The doctor, I think Monappa, had just announced that there was no need to worry, and he was walking out at that time with Sandal Shetty when the doctor dropped his medical bag with a thud. Opening his eyes, the master asked what the noise was and then inquired who was at his feet. Hearing that it was Hegde, the engineer, he told Monappa, the doctor, to leave. Hegde started to massage the master's feet and was alone with him until 4 that morning, 4 a.m. the morning of August 8. A little after midnight, Nityananda startled him by speaking. And this is one of the longest quotes I've heard from Nityananda. I'm sure it's a paraphrase, but it's pretty striking. And so, at 4 in the after midnight, Nityananda startled him by speaking and said this: "People only come here for money, and the more they get, the more they want. Their greed is boundless. Sometimes they arrive hungry and with only the clothes on their backs, but soon they start demanding luxuries like cars and houses. One would think that with their basic human needs satisfied, they would seek something higher, something spiritual, but they persist. There is little point in allowing this body to continue. Tomorrow I will take samadhi. Tomorrow I will take samadhi. Tomorrow I will take samadhi." And that was repeated 3 times. And so the last paragraph of this chapter, this last sentence, "Tomorrow I will take samadhi," he repeated 3 times. Hegde was stunned because, while Nityananda was very weak, doctors had found nothing clinically wrong with him. Most devotees fully expected him to recover. Soon he began calling for Swami Janandananda, demanding to know why he had not come. When Hegde begged Nityananda to postpone his Mahasamadhi, Nityananda replied that he would, if asked by someone with selfless devotion and love. After all, was not Pundalika a great devotee? This is a story in Hinduism. Was not Pundalika a great devotee who made the Lord of Pandarpur wait for him? And was there no such person here, someone with selfless love and devotion? One would be enough to put off the samadhi. With such a person present, Nityananda said, not even God could leave without permission. He would be unable to break that bond of pure love. And pointing his index finger at Hegde, Nityananda asked, can you offer this one selfless devotion? But Hegde tearfully replied, I don't know. So, quite poignant. Let me talk about some of the main points as I see them here in the chapter, working from the back and the front of it. Clearly, the cosmology, talking about God, and a more qualitative approach, certainly talking of devotion and love, is not like Buddhism. The raw material may be a midway point between this Siddha lineage, somewhat Advaita Vedanta yogic, non-denominational Hindu approach of Nityananda. It's certainly yogic. It certainly has elements of Kundalini yoga or pranayama or bhakti yoga or karma yoga. Karma yoga is the yoga or the path of liberation associated with action or service. That's seva, S-E-V-A, service in Sanskrit. Seva is the way of karma yoga, or the karma yogi who seeks to become one or seeks perfection by way of activity. Karma is the basic meaning of the word karma is action. And so kama vipaka in Buddhism is action reaction, that's it. So it's action, but then has the meaning of consequential activity, meaning causal, leading to consequences. So Nityananda teaches, do your danda, do your responsibility as you see it. Do your fulfill your obligations, which is particularly to family and at work and in relationships, and then for self-care and continued learning, growing, self-healing and development. So that's the way of karma yoga. Meanwhile, we're talking here about selfless love and devotion. This is bhakti yoga, or the path, the yoga of devotion. And what's interesting about that is that it's not... The point of that I think is from Chaitanyananda, where the paragraph starting, this is only my view from the heart, meaning sincerely, but he's explaining what Nityananda meant by more work can be done in the subtle, saying only the earnest seeker with a pure heart can find him, now that he's in the subtle only. By pure, he wrote, it is not meant a person with perfect behavior. So we're not talking about absolute perfect morality. We're not talking about absolute perfect wisdom. We're actually talking about perfect love for the master, perfect desire. Perfect love means total. And the reality is that we don't have perfect total love. Okay? We can't develop. We're not at the stage of development where we may manifest perfect love ever. Because, we don't even know what it is. I certainly couldn't say I do know what the summit of green ray activation looks like. It looks like Nityananda, I guess, and I don't know his mind, except as he expresses and as I feel. But bhakti yoga, the way of guru yoga, or the yoga of relation of bhakti-based devotion, love towards a master or guru, is this is seeking the ideal of love. And we don't understand it, but we can seek it. And it's certainly not, it's a different way than Buddhism, clearly. They're like different than the Eightfold Path. Meanwhile, they're very compatible. If one has this feeling for a teacher or a master. I mean, I feel this for Nityananda. More so than Gautama. Because Gautama wasn't leading with love. He was leading with wisdom and teaching, I think, the elements of path from here to freedom from the octave. Nityananda is, in many ways, mainly teaching or offering, by his life and activity, a chance for people to partake of bhakti yoga. This perfect love for the master, or complete and ideal green ray love for a teacher, is itself a manifestation of perfect or total desire and longing to become one with Godhead, whether we say God Shiva or the Logos or Intelligent Infinity or Krishna or Nirvana. It's really the same. And anybody who doesn't know that is probably caught in the thicket of views. What's beyond the octave is beyond the octave. What's beyond Triloka countless names and is essentially unnameable. It's inconceivable, of course. And Hindus prefer a bhakti path way, and then talk about God Shiva giving a gift of divine liberation and understanding. There is absolute liberation from the octave, from ignorance, from suffering, from reincarnation. In that state, there is omniscience. That's beyond understanding, and that's, I think, clearly manifest by Nityananda. And you can say Nityananda is the essence of love. You see, that's Chaitanyananda's take on it. People touch the elephant and describe what they're touching, blind man and the elephant. We are akin to the blind men or people trying to conceive the inconceivable, trying to conceive and conceptualize ideal conditions, ideal developments, ideals of development, love and wisdom, right? What's the ideal of love? I can't tell you. What's the ideal of wisdom? You can't either. We don't know. We're not at that stage. I thought it was very important yesterday, that in the Dhammika Sutta, you see these two series are linked. The talking on Nityananda and Sutta Nipata. At the end of Dhammika Sutta, particularly from Mingun Sayadaw, it all came from Mingun Sayadaw. So praise to him. That the understanding of the nine precepts, 8+1, where the 8 is the 5+3, five are, common panchashila. Don't kill living beings. Don't take what's not given. Don't lie. Don't do harm to self and other. Or don't take alcohol or do sexual harm in any way, which could be don't take the spouse of a married spouse, or don't do harm sexually. There's the original formulation, and then there's how we individually may conceive them. It's all very subtle, and there's more to say. It's not black and white, even. Those 5+3+1=9, and the ninth, or the last, is cultivation of metta, and particularly directional visualization, directional prayer, where may all beings be well and happy is directed to the 10 directions specifically. 10 directions is 4 cardinal points and the midpoints and above and below. This is very powerful. This is very different than just saying may all beings be well and happy and leaving it at that. A diffuse expression has a diffuse effect. And a concentrated or focused expression has a focused and concentrated effect on the 7 chakras, effect on mind, and very strongly activates green ray in a way that the diffuse expression without the 10 directions doesn't do. And so Nityananda is akin, love for him, or a guru, any guru, is akin to a directional focusing of metta meditation. The prayer for metta, may all beings be well and happy, is focalized towards the guru. Not just may my guru be well and happy, but I love him. And the love, the focusing of direction of the love to one that we conceive of or imagine or believe is liberated, and an expression of perfect love and wisdom. I don't really see anybody at the level of Nityananda. I mean, I looked today at the word on Google, Siddhaloka, and the first thing is something like guru somebody shares his perfect Siddhaloka love, or guru Siddhaloka or something. Some other Hindu teacher, guru, who's talking about himself as from Siddhaloka or expressing Siddhaloka. Okay. Nityananda never even said this about himself. He let people come to him, and he didn't go to them. He didn't ask, please come to me, I can do this and that for you. But it's very true that much is revealed and known, much or maybe all can be known in mind by leading with love or by seeking perfect green ray development. Those who love purely, which is not I want, I mean there's a I want in it, but it's really I love what you are, above all. Those that love purely, as far as I can tell, have access to knowing that the intellect cannot discover. They may see, those with perfect love and devotion to a teacher, or to an object of devotion, when that object of devotion is worthy of it, much awakening comes naturally. Like the metaphor of the boxcars following the engine. Much comes naturally. At the end, I'm going to talk about Nityananda's heartbreaking or heartful, sad commentary on the people who came to him. But the image or metaphor of boxcars of a train going up a hill, possibly slipping backwards without sand thrown on the tracks for traction. In a way, you can say that Nityananda magical tricks or siddhis, magical manifestation, it's not a trick, I know, but the siddhi manifestations of magical this and that, were akin to sand thrown on the tracks so that the boxcars or the devotees or the followers of Nityananda or a teacher could keep traction and not slip behind and break the connection. So the guru grants wishes, which were clearly primarily material, physical, social, interpersonal, akin to sand thrown on tracks to keep the boxcars, to keep the devotees from falling away. Why? What does he get from it? You know? Nityananda reprimanded somebody who was asking, does God want puja? Something like that. This is the Hindu way of thinking. Does God want me to do puja? Because God, whatever, Krishna, whoever they're conceiving, likes to get my incense and flowers and devotion. Nityananda reprimanded him, saying, God needs nothing. It's for you, you're doing it. And the ocean is infinite, it's only the size of the container come to draw from it that is of limited size. And it's only the size of the container that limits how much is taken. The ocean is limitless. The logos is limitless. It's the source of light, right? So light is limited. Intelligent infinity, intelligent energy, light, love, love, light, prana, pneuma, as the chi, ki, as the basis of seven vibratory densities, dimensions, and energy types. Before the seven is intelligent energy, and that's light, and the absolute or Godhead is the source of that light, right? The action of free will upon love, the action of will, infinite will, freely expressed upon infinite love, gives rise to light, said the raw material. So the source of light is infinite will and infinite love, which we can say love is enabling and allowing and letting there be the capacity, an infinite capacity to let there be. And what it lets be is let there be light. That's infinite. And the demonstrations of Nityananda's, I mean, now it makes sense, right? Nityananda's magical display, of which there were countless over his lifetime, looks to me like sand thrown upon the tracks to keep the devotees from slipping behind and breaking the connection with the engine. He as the engine, as the conductor, that's why he loved trains. Leading those that have some degree of pure love and devotion home to the great train yard in the sky. It's not a graveyard. It's a kingdom of light and love, the source, out of the octave. And to maintain a lasting connection with the engine, each boxcar, each individual, must forge a bond of unshakable faith and conviction. Must. Ideally would. And when, and to the degree that one has naturally faith and conviction, which is shraddha in Buddhism. It's in Buddhism they talk extensively about the importance that at first level satipanna, one of the fetters broken is any doubt. Doubt what? Doubt in Tri Ratna, what's that? But doubt in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And here too is the importance of faith. But you know, you can fake it, but the reality is as it is, anyone has some particular degree of faith or conviction in any one teacher or teaching. So it's good to assess one's, to be aware, consciously, to identify one's own level of faith and conviction, which is not perfect or total, but limited and relative. I have certain degree of faith and conviction in this teaching or teacher. That's good to know that. It's not good to manipulate or pretend or imagine oneself with more than one has. But in Buddhism, when there's a first awakening, one does know, yep, Gautama is as he says he is. The goal is as he said it is, even though I don't have it or I'm not finally there, I've tasted it. And then the Sangha is a good place for that work. To go to the goal that is as he said it was, and the path as he said it was, and he is, seems to be free, Gautama, and same with Nityananda. And this final point here, everything else he said would happen automatically, also bears reflection, meaning the way of bhakti maga, bhakti path. The way of transformation that is centered in deep love and devotion for a guru. I really believe him when he said when he says everything else happens automatically, meaning that love remaining strong does lead one out or lead to perfection of the seven rays. I believe that now. I've not been into Bhaktipada, Bhakti Magga, my life, but I get this now. And it's interesting, in an earlier paragraph here, talking with presented by Mr. Hatengi, his story himself, saying that he was afraid that he'd find a mention of Nityananda's passing in obituaries, saying he grew insecure about his own spiritual practice. In a way, there is no practice, but the existence and growth or cultivation or natural lifespan expression of deep, sincere love and devotion to the guru. And so, like a plant grows naturally, what's my practice? To water it and weed around it and help it be in the sun so that it's simply develops deep roots and keeps growing in worship to the sun, as plants do. That's the practice. And here he mentions, even though he had his anxieties about his own practice, so-called, even though Nityananda had told me there was nothing to read or study. It's not that you shouldn't, do whatever you want. He's not really saying you shouldn't read or study. I'm sure every one of them did. He's saying it's not necessary to read or study. And that's Jnana Yoga, the wealth of the Jnani, who is working with Jnana, which is Gnosis. Actually, it's the root of the word Gnosis from Greek. The way of using mind and mental function to clarify path and proceed along the path. This is not Jnana Yoga, this is Bhakti Yoga. Or Nityananda was offering an opportunity for those that were seeking liberation to graciously follow the engine. And perfect love carries perfect love for one who is truly an engine of evolution leads one home, and study and reading aren't necessary. They're helpful, but depends on what you read and study, right? You can read and study things that are confused, because who do they come from? They come from sources that are fully enlightened or not. Nearly never, seems to me. Everybody's got their own thing, right? Some people think this boy and that girl is the great teachers. Okay, go right ahead. I'll stay with Nityananda and Gautama and the raw material and Lao Tzu and Zhuangzi and Ramana Maharshi and Heraclitus and some of the Chico Javier's work. I'll stay with these sources, fine for me. And everybody should find that which they believe is an engine of evolution. So, we saw this amazing story of the 9-year-old boy, son of Dr. Pandlaskar, who had who basically was channeling Nityananda, or channeling some Dharmapala, some protector of the Dharma, this Dharma, saying, "What are you doing here? Go to Ganesh Puri. He leaves today because of the Assembly of Sages says that he alone, he needs to leave the body and be permanently settled in the subtle, not the astral, but in the non-physical, without a physical body, with no longer requirement to maintain a physical body, so that he could be assisting in some energy, basically some kind of multi-dimensional energy balancing associated with counteracting negative energetic effects of the Ashtagraha 8-planet astrological configuration of the solar system in February 62. I was born in April 62. Maybe I delayed it so I could be a little helper on the side of that. So the boy, basically channels some great source. And the boy was so affected that he didn't fully recover for years. Recover means he probably was in sort of a mild trance or samadhi-like clear mind or quiet mind, but disorient, sort of spiritual expansion or expanded consciousness, or a refined consciousness that makes living on Earth in a physical, coarse, gross way difficult. That's like the thousand-yard stare of post-traumatic stress. Similar to after a great shocking event, similar to after very deep samadhi or higher jhana. Mind is not embodied. The embodiment of the capacity for mind to function well, embodied to this form in this dimension, is temporarily taken offline and needs some time to readjust and get back into physical embodiment mode. That is very common in deep meditation. I'm not going to do the next chapter. We will pick that up next time, which is Nityananda's Passing Part 2. I think I could just do a little bit. There's always so much to say. Let me just see if there's something from an earlier paragraph of the chapter that I'd like to explain. It's certainly interesting that Nityananda is as he is, and nearly none of the disciples could figure out that he was going to die or leave, because they just don't want it. And so never underestimate the capacity for human self-deception or blindness driven by emotional fear or emotional bias. So although they were with him so often, so much, they couldn't see what he really meant. It's very common. It's very hard to see what is in real time. 2020 hindsight, and looking from behind or looking at what happened, like thinking about a movie, we can understand much more of the movie than while it's playing. That's why watching important movies 2 and 3 times and more is very helpful. Or reading books 2 and 3 times and over, or any source of light, truth, inspiration, guidance that we value, importance to review it, return to it, and work through it several times until you feel it's enough. Same thing with the process of music therapy, listening to particular songs from our past to trigger emotional catharsis of sadness. Listen to it as many times as it takes until the tears stop, until I feel complete that this cycle of catharsis is over and I don't have to listen to the song another time, like that. So despite their proximity physically, nobody got that. Nearly none but one woman got it that he was about to leave. And it's not that the people closest to a great teacher are the most evolved. Not at all. Sometimes, I mean, Lin Chi cursed out the people, the monks that were around him at his passing. He said something like, to think that such a expletive deleted would be, such a jackass would be my Dharma heir. And then he passed away. To think that such a jackass would something be here with me or be the Dharma lamp transmission receiver. He was that kind of guy. But it's sadly the case, or the case sadly or not, that commonly a great being is most proximately surrounded not by the most evolved disciples or devotees. So it was only one woman, Mantra Siddhi Bai, who got it. And you can see that he detoxes, he does some kind of a body purification before passing, the discharge from the ear. She knew what it meant. She interpreted it as a sign he's cleansing his system of toxins for one purpose, only one, which is to leave the body. To be able to allow consciousness to sever its link with the body more efficiently is the purification. Like animals who don't eat before they're going to die. Like people who refuse food before death. It's exactly the same to so-called purify the body to... like Nityananda had gained a lot of weight, but he was back to thin at the end. To facilitate the severance of the linkage of consciousness to the physical body form. That's it. It's not that the body should be some pure thing. The body's not what's pure, I don't know. But it's to facilitate departure. Then, a nice magical story of the lamp, the oil lamp that doesn't go out. It's oil for an hour, but it doesn't go out, even though he's 900 miles away, because he was a close disciple. This is Captain Hatengi. So it was his lamp in his home. His wife had some inspiration to adorn the altar to Nityananda. She got it that he was leaving and wanted to express her gratitude. Shabli, she was a good wife, too. And her appreciation for Nityananda for his positive effect on her husband. Then the light doesn't go out and lasted much longer than an hour of oil. And finally, there's his disappointment or growing sadness that often approached tears that he offered... he offered that boxcar connection. He offered to be the engine of evolution for those who could truly feel love and devotion. And that's all, and that's what he really wanted or hoped for from them. I mean, the greater teacher, the greater the teacher, the less they need and ask, clearly. And the teacher needs, the true teacher needs nothing. But they hope that people will learn and help themselves by the teacher's being and work. And so he was like Krishna, disappointed. And didn't hesitate to throw stones at the silly people who were trying to count his fingers for their lucky number, for gambling. More work can be done in the subtle, for sure. And then his final comment to Hegde after midnight is sad to hear. people only come here for money. Now, it wasn't that every single one did. And you can see, I mean, even a being such as Nityananda will say things that could be picked apart by angry-minded people. He said people only come here for money. Well, there were some people who came with devotion. So then he's not telling the truth. No, you have an inflamed mind. And so people who have greater love in mind, whose discernment is infused with love, understand when certain people are speaking in a general way and not literal, and not literal in the sense of maximally precise linguistically, not maximally precise choice of words, because it's not needed. And people who are clear know that, or their clarity is based in love. And people who have insufficient love argue and quibble on trivial points. So you make your mind, and you live in it. So make a lovely mind, a beautiful mind, and then you'll live in a beautiful sphere of awareness, chittakash, a realm of awareness. And very much so, ten-directional metta, is helpful to make a beautiful mind. But he said, in a generalized way, people only come for money. The more they get, the more they want. This is the Buddhist argument against desire, and why Gautama and a strict Buddhist would basically have the view, not Ra's view, all desires are appropriate for the entity at the right time or something, and entities, desires that are unneeded fall away naturally over time if one distills love light from the experience or the consequences of the desiring. If the one doesn't distill love light or use the experience of desire and its fulfillment and its aftermath and the consequences and one's changed mind and view and understanding of life and self, if one doesn't do that distillation or reflection contemplation, that is the distilling of love light from the acted upon desire, if one doesn't do that, then indeed the more they get, the more they want, greed becomes boundless, and with basic human needs satisfied, they keep seeking more physical desire objects. Physical objects or material desires continue. That's what happens when the entity does not distill love light or love wisdom from the whole experience of desiring and allowing, one seeking and finding and experiencing and being altered and changed and modified thereby, touched by the experience of finding or securing an object of desire, getting what you want, now what, without seeking inner development, one becomes addicted and ever craving. Tanha and upadana grow with the one that doesn't realize, that doesn't move to heart and mind or deeper understanding in their seeking and fulfillment of desires. And so one would think, he wrote, or he said, that with their basic human needs satisfied, they would seek something higher, higher than physical, material, social, interpersonal. But they don't. Most people didn't. And that's one reason he left. And you can see, he said, there's little point in allowing this body to continue. Tomorrow I will take samadhi, said three times. It's over. You know, saying three times, something three times is has some magical potency, you know. Very much so. There is a magical, metaphysical effect to triplicity, triadic activity, Trinitarianism, like, because it's of the structure of the universe. It's a resonant with cosmogenesis, metaphysically, for sure, right? From the void came the one in three forms, and that became the 10,000 things, or the seven and the 10,000 things, 1, 3, 7, and back to 2, or 10,000. But 3 is a magical metaphysical number, of course. And so Hermes Trismegistus, right? Tris is 3. Magical, triply magical, triply magical or majestic Hermes. 3 is important. So he said, tomorrow I'll take samadhi thrice, and did. And this is also, you know, why great teachers leave. Their work is done. So he was about 65 or something, and that was that. And there he had other work to do, and you know, ask and it shall be given, or call and it shall be answered. The calling was low for most, and nearly all that came to him had kept themselves at the level of material desiring. And not one, even the closest disciples, couldn't offer total selfless devotion. I mean, who can anyway? But it's a very high achievement. It's green ray. It's prema. It's absolute love, and it's a big deal. And one must be well healed, actually, for it. One must have much clearance of lower triad blockage to enjoy a radiant heart. So, as far as I know. Anyway, next time we look into the next chapter, Nityananda's Passing, Part 2. And we have that chapter and afterward and remembering, so 4 to go. And after that, I will read Jewel of the Heart, although I may have to read it with my physical book in my hand rather than PDF. So if anybody is aware of a PDF version that's useful, that's available, of the other book, which is Sky of the Heart, Jewels of Wisdom from Nityananda, a PDF version. The page here, this site doesn't have the whole book. So if anybody knows that, please let me know or send it to me. Anyway, I hope this was useful. Thank you for being here, because somebody's here. I can do this, and it's good for me. And I much appreciate being here doing this. So take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.